You're listening to a podcast from 702.
Clark, I'm going to be speaking to Mervyn Abrahams in a few moments' time. He's program coordinator at the Peter Maritzburg Economic Justice and Dignity Group. You might remember that in yesterday's open line, somebody called in and basically complained about the fact that the price of food is starting to be concerning, or the escalation in the price of food is starting to be concerning. Spoke more specifically about the price of potatoes, and we thought let's have Mervyn Abrahams join us. They've done some studies into the price and the ever increasing price of a specific basket of foods, and they've created a specific index to be able to check and follow those trends. And I'm really looking forward to this conversation, but I'd like to invite you to be part of this conversation and hear your experiences of the increases in certain food items. In fact, maybe I should say all food items should seem to be rising in price. How are you handling that? Are you finding that you are having to buy less goods? Are you beginning to sense that maybe your understanding of what is essential in terms of your food basket is diminishing while the price goes high? How are you dealing with all of that? I'm really looking forward to that conversation with Mervyn Abrahams. Mervyn Abrahams joins me now. He is the program coordinator at the Peter Maritzburg Economic Justice and Dignity Group. Mervyn, thank you so much for joining us. I really appreciate your time.
Good morning, Aubrey, and good morning to all your listeners.
So you've gone and done a study on a specific basket of basic foods that many families use over a certain amount of time, hence the index that you guys have come up with. Tell us about that process, Mervyn, and what inspired it?
So, Aubrey, we since June of 2018, we've been meeting with women in low-income households to ask them what foods would they purchase should they have sufficient funds,
yeah,
or sufficient money to purchase it. And out of that came a basket of 44 foods. We started tracking that basket in Pietermaritzburg, and with COVID, we decided to expand our data collection. So we also collect data now in the Johannesburg, Cape Town, Durban, and Springbok in the Northern Cape.
Yeah.
In order to augment the numbers that we have in Pietermaritzburg. And what we are seeing across the country is a steady increase in the cost of basic food products. If I could tell you what's in our basket,
yes,
so the listeners have a sense.
Yeah.
So our basket is really very basic. It's constructed for a household of seven because, you know, in the lower income households are often much larger and bigger than your middle class households. But we have in our basket maize meal, rice, flour, sugar beans, some cooking oil, potatoes, onions, chicken, and then we have eggs and chicken feet and we have like tomatoes and carrots and butternut, and a few fruits, and then tin pochets and canned beans and margarine and peanut butter and bread.
Yes.
So those are the kind of basic things in our basket, which is the kind of stuff that most households would actually purchase at the end of the month.
So Mervyn, just before you continue there, so that basic basket of food items represents a particular economic sector?
Well, it is the kind of sector, the lower income sector, yes, that we focus on. So
right.
we do not focus on the whole country, and there's a very good reason for that, Aubrey, because with South Africa's very high levels of inequality, if you just average everything out, then you actually do not capture the picture of the poorest households.
Yes.
And that's why our focus is low-income households only.
Sure. And what has your finding told you? I mean, just in terms of the comparison of the different times that you've been looking at, What has your research told you in terms of the stability of cost and pricing? What are we seeing?
So if I could give you the price of that basket of 44 goods in the different cities. So in Johannesburg, that basket will cost you 3,808 rand. In Cape Town, it will cost you 3,854 rand. In Durban, it will cost you 3,731 rand. And in Pietermaritzburg, it will cost you 3,601 rand. So it's generally speaking in the region of 3,783 rand. And that's what the basket cost at the end of September. It is quite interesting to look, as you were mentioning about your caller saying that prices have increased.
Yeah, if we look specifically at potatoes.
Yeah, so if we look, for instance, potatoes is included, but if we look since the lockdown in March,
yeah,
the basket has increased by 252 rand. And if I can just go through a few of the items
sure.
and show you the increases.
Yeah.
So, for instance, 35 kgs of maize meal has increased by 16 rand. 10 kgs of rice has increased by 23 rand. Flour has increased by 12 rand. 5 kgs sugar beans has increased by 30 rand. Mm. And 5 liters of cooking oil has increased by 13 rand. And the 10 kgs of potatoes that you were talking about in the Pietermaritzburg area since the lockdown started has increased by 24 rand. So that gives us a sense of how the prices have increased during this time. And then, of course, the question around how much money do people have in their pockets? And, of course, there isn't enough money in the pockets to actually buy that.
Mervin, I suppose every year there's going to be an increase in the price of various food items. But, of course, we've had the anomaly of the COVID-19 moment. In your opinion, do you think that the increase in food items or the price increase in food items is indicative of a normal rate of increase, or has the COVID-19 moment intensified those increases? What's your assessment?
So our assessment is definitely that the COVID-19 has impacted on prices and contributed to some of the big price increases we have seen. And it's largely to do with the value chains and the logistics involved in transporting food across the country when the time when we couldn't move goods and services. So some of that has definitely had an impact. And then, of course, also the disappearance of the smallholder farmers supplying the informal market.
Yes.
One of the big learnings of COVID has been that the informal food sector actually provides a lot of fresh food, like fresh vegetables, like potatoes and onions, etc., to lower-income households. And when they disappear off the street, then, of course, we see prices increase at retail stores.
That is a very powerful observation, Mervin, because I remember thinking exactly the same thing. So where I live, there's a guy who, you know, walks around and he sells vegetables, fresh vegetables, and he's got a very, very unique sort of call. You can hear him coming as he walks through the various streets where I live. And during the lockdown period, there was silence. You didn't hear him. I mean, he comes at very regular intervals. You never heard him. And that is definitely what corroborates the point that you make, that the informal providers of these services were on shutdown. And indeed, we had to go and purchase food from the larger chains. How has that impacted, I suppose, that sector of service providers, of people who sell fresh food in that sense? But what does it mean for those people who were using those services at that time? Did they have to fork out even more money in terms of transport to get those foods?
So yes, that is definitely a case. People had to fork out more money because the retail stores, of course, the prices were increasing as I've just indicated, constantly. But also, Aubrey, we also have to look at the connection between other services. So, because it's an affordability issue. So we have also seen the price of electricity increase, the price of water increase, and taxi fares have increased since March. And all of that has an impact because the more these things increase on a fixed household income, the less money women tell us they have to spend on food, because now they have to pay extra on, for instance, electricity. And we must remember that in South Africa, all our staple foods need to be cooked. Maize meal needs to be cooked. Potatoes need to be cooked.
Sure.
Rice needs to be cooked. So you do need electricity. It's an essential service. So when the price of electricity increases, it means that there's less money left to lower income households in order to purchase their food at the end of the month. But another issue that is directly connected to this, for instance, is that our wages are extremely low. So when we look, for instance, at the national minimum wage, so if a worker earned the national minimum wage in September, that would have brought into his pocket 3,487 rand, and then our basket cost 3,783 rand. So even if that entire wage, which of course is not the case, even if that entire wage was spent on our basket, they still would not have been able to afford all the items in our basket.
It's such a scary reality, Mervin. The reality also is that many of those people who would have earned that minimum wage you're talking about would have lost their jobs over that time. So that income would have disappeared, right? What are we to make of all of this? Oh, and by the way, please give me a call on 011-883-0702 with, as I speak to Mervin Abrahams. He is program coordinator at the Peter Maritzburg Economic Justice and Dignity Group. They've done a study that has given them an index of household affordability, the affordability of buying certain food items, over a certain period of time. And, the picture looks bleak, folks, but I'd like to take your calls. What have you had to do? What sort of sacrifices have you had to make in order for you to have the amount of food that you need for your family over the time that you buy from time to time? Mervin, this food basket for a family of seven, is it able to sustain this family over a period of a month?
So women tell us that they try their very best, because of the quantities that we check, to be able to feed their households on this for a month. But we also do need to say, Aubrey, that this basket in and of itself is not necessarily a nutritious basket of food.
Indeed.
It's a difference.
Yep.
In the sense that households buy what they can buy. But when you look at, for instance, the cost of nutrition, a nutritious basket for a household of seven, then we would say that that would cost you in the region of 4,774 rand. So that is about roughly, you know, 1,000 rand more than the basket in our index.
Yes, yes. And what are we going to do about this reality, Mervin? I mean, it looks bleak, right? And what are we going to do? What is your advice? What should people do to try and augment their basket of food at this time, at this critical time? People have lost their jobs. It's bleak out there. What are the solutions?
So there are a number of areas we need to look at. There's unfortunately not one silver bullet that would solve the entire issue.
Yeah.
So the first and the most immediate concern for us is that the top-ups that government gave on social grants be kept in place and made permanent. The reason for that is that if you remember the massive spike in hunger we saw during March and April.
Yes.
And then the state gave the top-up. That top-up contributed to 27% decrease in hunger. Now, the economic situation hasn't changed since then. So if the top-ups get taken away at the end of this month, we are bound to see that level of hunger again in the country. So it's critical that as a first step that that be done. The second step is that we do have to get economic productivity going in and job creation. But we also have to look at how do we get food to the plates of South Africans. So it's the food system. And currently what we have had in COVID has taught us that the lines, for instance, just one example, that many of our retail stores purchase tomatoes in Limpopo and then take our tomatoes all across the country. Can we not decentralize where we grow our food closer to the city so that the chain of bringing that stuff to the plate is less? But that would require the corporate sector to change and the retail sector to change their buying practices. So those would all make some form of contribution to resolve some of the issues.
011-883-0702. No doubt you've been affected by the realities of COVID-19, an ever-declining economy. How have you been making ends meet? Yeah, you've listened to the findings that Mervin Abrahams and his team have found as they studied the trends in the buying of basic foods. What are you doing? How are you making ends meet? My sense is that this affects almost every South African. Yeah, give me a call. I'd like to hear of your unique experience. Temba is in Glen Vista. Hi, Temba.
Bro, Aubrey.
Hey, bro, Temba, what's happening, man?
Ah, my job, bro.
Good to hear you. What's on your mind?
We're always lurking in the background. I'm sure you're listening to the show. So we are with
I'll be back tomorrow. I'll be back tomorrow. Go ahead, sir. What is on your mind?
I wanted to say, bro, Aubrey, look, the pandemic had a devastating effect throughout the world. So to measure, it's a good thing to measure what the impact is. But I think the figures that we're looking at is likely obscured a bit, favorably or not favorably, as a result of the pandemic. What is critical for me is to go back to our planning and look at what shopping centers and what, let's call it, informal retailers are in the planning perspective. Can they contribute in the changing of society as a whole, whether in the creation of employment and so forth? What planning in South Africa has done is it has taken shopping centers as, let's call it, a decision that is largely driven by business, at least driven by a, let's call it, a national program. So for by way of example, if I want a shopping center and I want to have big chunks of money, I'm going to set up a shopping center in Sandton. Why? Because, you know, there's all the necessary infrastructure in place and so it goes on. Now, in instances where you end up with pandemics, that shopping center, as great as it may be, as wonderful as it may be in terms of extraction of profit in that particular community, you find that it does not in any way assist with dealing with issues such as the pandemic. And you made a point that, you know, the gentleman who sells veggies in your neighborhood was suddenly muted by this thing, and then you had to go to the big chains. The tough reality, Bra Aubrey, is that only the big chains are ready, essentially, financially anyway, ready to deal with instances such as the COVID. Now, if you don't take as a government, or you don't as a planner sitting in one of the municipalities, if you don't plan for a pandemic, and by that I mean, if you don't see the importance of feeding a nation under those circumstances, using that very gentleman that is selling in the street, you're going to find that you have to shut him down many years when that pandemic happens.
Timber.
Simply not because this person is unwilling to be part of a solution, but simply because you have failed to prepare the system for that particular instance.
Temba, let me let you go, my brother. Thanks very much for that. What do you make of those insights, Mervin? It's a systemic problem, says Temba. It's something that we need to start factoring in as part of policy, that we may have these kinds of situations where we have a pandemic and all of the things that that ensue. How do we deal with it, and what are your thoughts?
So, Aubrey, I would fully agree with Temba. It's a systemic problem. It's a problem about wages, but it's also a problem about food systems. And not only must we prepare for pandemics, which we will get more and more, there's also the climate crisis and droughts that we also have to prepare for. So the best way actually to prepare for that is to create local economic activity, as he's saying. We have to bring in the small person. We have to begin to break down these massive corporate farms and go more along smallholder farms, growing their vegetables on the basis of agroecology, which is much more nutritious, much more healthier, but closer to the tables of households. And I would also agree with him that we do need to move away from concentrating everything into big corporate
companies.
Because that means that if a big corporate goes down, your entire food system goes down. There isn't the resilience in the food system to withstand it. It's only at local level that the resilience can be built.
And so this is perhaps a moment that we as South Africans need to start looking at things such as home gardens, you know, home food gardens, urban food gardens. I know that in Cuba, that is something that has been, you know, done with great success. These urban farms where food is produced, even in the urban areas. We perhaps need to think seriously, just in terms of the systemic issues that Temba raised. We need to start thinking about how do we augment our food production away from the large industrial farmers, so that perhaps we can, improve the business of the small person.
Exactly, and that is really the big issue that faces us now in the post-COVID era. How do we create urban farming? How do we localize our food system? And then get more players involved, because then more players are engaged in the food economy, because it's also about money and it's also about income. But we need to bring more people into that system. And I think that's going to be the challenge that faces us going forward.
Well, Mervin, I want to thank you very much for your time and your insights into what I think is a serious crisis. Unless we start changing our behaviors and, as you say, get the smaller guy involved, not only at the retail end of the process, but also in the production of that food, we may find that we deepen the crisis levels. I want to thank you very much for joining us and thank you very much for your work.
Thank you, Aubrey, and thank you to all of you.
Mervin Abrahams is coordinator for the Peter Maritzburg Economic Justice and Dignity Group. I'd be interested to hear your thoughts about this. I think that we need to start understanding the fact that if we don't do something at the level of production of food, not only just depending on the large farmers, but in the urban areas ourselves, in our households, the food crisis story is going to deepen. I'm interested to hear your thoughts about that as we continue. But let's take a quick break now. When we come back, we take the news and then we talk about how you negotiate for your salary. Yeah?